All right, so you know how everyone's always talking about how amazing VR is? Like, it's going to revolutionize everything.
Definitely.
But then you try it and you're like, whoa, I think I'm going to be sick. It's like the elephant in the virtual room, you know?
Yeah.
That queasy feeling can really ruin the whole experience.
Yeah, it's a real hurdle for a lot of people. A lot of people just can't use it.
Totally. But what if, and this is where it gets really cool, what if your VR headset could actually tell when you're about to get sick and could, like, adjust itself before it even happened?
Now that would be a game changer.
Right. And that's exactly what we're diving into today with this research paper, which I have to say blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fascinating look at how we might be able to personalize those virtual reality experiences using some pretty cool tech.
Okay, so they use something called FNIRS in this research, which sounds super complicated, but it's actually pretty straightforward.
It's not as intimidating as it sounds.
Yeah, so imagine like shining a light on your brain to see how busy it is, how much it's working. That's essentially what FNIRS is doing. It's measuring blood flow to different areas of the brain.
And it's based on this idea that just like your muscles need more blood when you're working out, your brain needs more blood flow when it's thinking hard.
Ah, okay.
So by measuring those changes in blood flow, FNIRS can give us like a window into how much effort your brain is putting into processing everything it's experiencing.
Which is key in the context of VR, right? Because that feeling of being overwhelmed, like there's too much going on, that's often what leads to that nausea.
Exactly. It's like your brain is just trying to process too much sensory information all at once, like it's on overload and it just throws in the towel. It can't handle it.
So these researchers, they combine this FNRS tech with a standard HTC Vive headset. Picture them kind of working in sync in real time.
It's not like they're looking at the data after the fact or anything. This is all about making adjustments on the fly.
It's amazing. But the big question is, can we actually detect VR sickness this way, like reliably?
Right, that's what they wanted to find out. So they designed this experiment where people were put into a virtual forest, which, okay, sounds pretty pleasant so far,
Yeah,
right?
sign me up.
But, and here's the catch, they were passively moved through this environment. So they weren't really controlling the movement themselves, which is actually like a surefire way to trigger VR sickness in a lot of people.
Interesting. Sneaky, but effective, I guess.
Huh.
Okay. So they're going through this forest and they're asked to press a button when they start feeling nauseous.
Right.
All the while, that FNIRS is monitoring their brain activity, you know, keeping tabs on that blood flow.
That brain busy signal.
I love that, the brain's busy signal. And what did they find? Could they actually tell?
What they found is that the FNIRS was remarkably good at picking up on those early warning signs, even before the person was fully aware they were feeling sick.
Whoa, hold on. More sensitive than actually asking people if they felt sick.
In many cases, yes, way more sensitive. It was picking up on these subtle cases where people might not even rate their sickness as very high on those standard questionnaires.
Wow, so people might not even be consciously aware that they're on the verge of VR sickness, but the FNIRS is already seeing those telltale signals in their brain activity. That's wild.
That's what makes this so fascinating. It's like our subjective experience, how we feel, might actually be lagging behind what's happening at a physiological level.
Wow. Okay, so we can potentially see it coming before it even hits.
Yeah.
But can we prevent it? That's got to be the next step, right?
That's the million-dollar question. And this is where the concept of dynamic FOV adjustment comes in.
Dynamic FOV adjustment.
Yes. So think of your field of view, FOV, as like your window into that virtual world. It's how much you can see around you without turning your head. The idea here is to manipulate that field of view in a way that reduces sensory overload and hopefully prevents nausea.
So, like making your peripheral vision blurry or something.
It's not quite making things blurry, but imagine it like this. When you're standing still in the virtual world, your field of view is wide open, you see a lot. But as you start moving, especially if it's quick or jerky, the edges of your vision subtly narrow, like you're looking through a tunnel.
Okay. See where you're going with this.
And by doing that, by narrowing that field of view, it subtly reduces the amount of visual information your brain has to process all at once, making the experience much smoother and hopefully less likely to induce nausea.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot between like being totally immersed and just feeling comfortable.
Exactly. And they tested two different approaches to this FOV adjustment. One was based solely on the user's movement speed, basically like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Makes sense.
But the other, and this is where it gets really interesting, used the FNIRS data to personalize the FOV adjustments in real time.
Okay, so instead of just assuming everyone's the same,
yeah,
this approach is taking those individual brain responses into account. Like, it's giving everyone a custom-tailored VR experience.
Yeah, that's the idea.
So, what happened? Did it actually work?
So you would think, right, personalized FOV, less brain overload, everybody's happy.
Right, less nausea, sign me up.
Exactly. And they did see that the FNIRS approach, it did what it was supposed to, reduce those heightened blood flow levels, less strain on the brain.
Okay, so less busy signal.
Less busy signal, yeah. But, and here's the kicker, it didn't actually make a statistically significant difference in how sick people felt.
Wait, so their brains were less busy, but they weren't feeling any less nauseous?
That's right. And that's where, you know, you start digging deeper. It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, why wouldn't it work the way they thought?
Well, the group using the FNIRS-driven FOV adjustment, they said they felt more focused, like really drawn into the experience, more so than the other group.
Interesting.
And some of them even lost track of time, which, you know, in VR research, that can be a sign that someone is really immersed, really engaged.
Okay, but isn't that what we want?
You'd think so, but it's like, they traded one problem for another. Instead of feeling nauseous, they were just mentally fatigued, you know?
Oh, I see. So it's not just about, like, reducing overall brain activity. It's about understanding, like, the different types of brain activity.
Exactly. Like, what kind of cognitive load is good and what makes you feel bad. We want that good kind of focus where you feel present, you're not uncomfortable.
You know, like flow state almost.
Right, flow state. And that's what future research needs to figure out, really. This study shows that FNIRS, while promising, it's not a magic bullet, we need to be able to differentiate between different types of brain activity.
So it's like FNIRS is speaking to us, but we don't speak the language fluently yet, right?
Perfect analogy. We're getting bits and pieces, but we need the whole dictionary, the whole grammar.
So what happens when we get there, when we understand all the nuances?
Well, then think about it. VR experiences that are truly personalized. Not just to what you say you like, but to how your brain actually responds.
That's pretty wild. This could be huge, right? And not just for gaming. Imagine, like, education.
Oh, absolutely.
No more kids nodding off in history class when you can drop them right into the middle of ancient Rome.
Exactly. And think about healthcare. VR therapy could be incredible, helping people overcome phobias, PTSD, things like that, in a safe environment.
Right. And if you could actually monitor their stress responses in real time, you could adjust the experience to make sure it's actually helping them, not making things worse.
That's the power of this technology, that feedback loop. It's not just about immersion. It's about understanding.
Okay, so we've gone from virtual forests to, like, the future of therapy. It's a lot to take in, but what does this all really mean for, like, the average person?
This research, even though it was focused on VR, I think it gives us a peek into a future where technology is way more personalized. Devices that sense how you're feeling and can adjust.
Hold on. Sense how we're feeling. That sounds kind of creepy. Are we talking about our phones reading our minds now?
Not reading minds, no, but more like understanding those physiological signals. Your smartwatch can already track your heart rate, your sleep. This is just taking it a step further, using those subtle changes in your brain activity to make a more intuitive experience.
So instead of my phone just buzzing at me with another notification when I'm already stressed out, it could actually, like, recognize I'm stressed and maybe suggest I take a break.
Exactly. Or a car that can sense when a driver is getting drowsy and suggest pulling over for a coffee. It's about technology working with us, not against us.
Okay, that's a future I can get behind, for sure. But this all depends on understanding how the brain works, right? Like, we've stumbled onto this language, but we can only understand a few words here and there.
And that's what makes all of this so exciting. The more we learn about these brain-body connections, the better we can make technology that actually improves our lives in a meaningful way.
Well, this deep dive has been quite a ride. We went from virtual forests to the potential of, like, brain-computer interfaces. And it all started with trying to figure out how to make VR less nauseating.
It just goes to show that sometimes the most unexpected discoveries can lead to some really fascinating places.
Absolutely. And it shows how important it is to keep asking questions, to keep pushing those boundaries. So on that note, we'll leave you with this thought. What if technology could adapt to us as much as we adapt to it? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.